Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to the Big Interview Season 2017-2018. Before this starts, a brief announcement. This season, we're inviting our listeners to join the Big Interview Members Club. In Spanish football, they call them socios, members. They are the lifeblood of the club, de facto owners, and they get special treatment in return. That's how this will work too. Here is everything you can get if you choose to become a socio of the Big Interview for £2.99 a month. You get one extra exclusive Big Interview episode. No one except the socios will hear this. Join now and you'll get Rafael van der Vaart.
David Silva.
It's a joy to watch.
Yeah, that's a joy. That goes away. The real number 10s. Mm. Because you have to be like Pogba. Big players, strong, box to box. And I think when you have still players like me, like Silva, Schneider, Iniesta, I think that's why you're going to buy a ticket.
Yeah, for sure.
And me too.
You get a brand new weekly show. We call it The Big Inside View, where I'll give you my take on what I've learned, seen or heard over the past 7 days in football. Socios will also receive bonus shows during the season, including question and answer specials around big events like Clásicos. All that for £2.99 a month. Less than a pint, less than the price of your favourite football magazine, less than a matchday programme. Go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to join us, to sign up now, to make this happen. That's Patreon, patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Join us. Make the Big Interviews bigger. How's that? Now, I've gone into every Big Interview knowing that football was going to be the main topic of conversation. It's principally why you all listen to this podcast, right? But there have been times when I've spoken to a guest who talked just as passionately about cricket, so much so that we've dedicated a special clip show to the sport. We begin with perhaps the most talented cricketer to have featured amongst our guests, Philip Neville. Phil was facing fastballs and Yorkers delivered by some recognised international players when he was just 8 years old. He did live to tell a tale, and that's why he's on the Big Interview. He was brilliant about football, about society, about education, about challenges, but he's fabulous and funny about cricket. A young Matthew Letizia, remember him, was also considered to be a skilled wicketkeeper and a prodigious batsman. He grew up idolising Ian Beefy Botham. Why wouldn't you? Had Matt not been a pretty capable footballer too, then he might well, like Phil, have made it as a fully fledged England professional in cricket. Phil also describes the mental toughness that he saw in the Australian cricketers he played with and explains how that helped him in his football career, while Chris Sutton argues that batsman is the most psychologically demanding role in all sport. Final word? Well, Jamie's not here, so Gary Neville gets it. It was a touching moment for me as he paid tribute to the late, great cricketer and cricket commentator, Australian captain, Australian television legend, Richie Beno. Enjoy. So now that we're finally in God's own country, not Spain, overlooking the canal, with Old Trafford in the background, your hotel, let's do the not obvious thing, and like we did with your brother, start with cricket, please. Yeah. Because nobody ever believes a Scots
my
a cricket
favourite
fan.
Sport.
Well, I'm a massive cricket fan, and I know you were also very good at it.
Yeah.
But the book
Class of 82 out of our league. Detail some outstanding stories.
Yeah.
People know you could play. But just tell us a little bit, for those outside Lancashire, the north of England, where semi-professional leagues flourish and teach you. Just tell a little bit about your background growing up. The fact that your dad was a good cricket player too.
Yeah.
How did you and Gary get involved in it? And what exactly were they getting you involved in?
In back, what, 30 years ago, you could play cricket in the summer. Cricket in the summer, football in the winter. They didn't overlap. So my dad was, watch Man United in the winter, play cricket in the summer. And when you say play cricket, he played Saturday, Sunday. We watched under 13s Sunday morning, under 18s, Monday, Wednesday, under 15s, Thursday. Practice nights was Tuesday, Thursday. So it was every night of the week.
A real community club feel.
It was a community club. My dad worked within the cricket club because it was volunteered along with his other job. My mum did the tees. Yeah. Tees is when, obviously, one side's bat, 50 overs. After 50 overs, you have an half an hour break. My mum prepared the sandwiches because she worked as a caterer. So it was all hands on deck. My grandma and granddad, my cousin, my auntie and uncle were all involved in the cricket club. It was sort of like back in those days where there was no nightclubs, no fancy bars. You went to your Legion, you went to your social club, you went to your cricket club. And ours was Greenmount Cricket Club. And when people asked me about my success at football, cricket was the reason I was successful at football. Because at 10 years of age, 8 years of age, I was playing with men. Cricket is a game where you've got to concentrate. Cricket's a game where you take a lot of hits. The fact that I was playing with men and practicing with men and mixing with men, saw our cricket club had some of the best cricket professionals that you could wish for. Mark Taylor.
Probably
the best Australian captain, you know, alongside Alan Border, Jamie Siddons, who played for Victoria. We had Matthew Hayden.
One of the biggest opening hitters of all time.
One of the best who stayed at our house. Franklin Stevenson, great all Western, all-rounder. Yeah. Played for Nottinghamshire, scored 1,000 runs and 100 wickets for Nottinghamshire. So these were great cricketers in our league. In the Lancashire leagues, we had all the top Australians. You're talking Jeff Lawson.
Marsh came at one stage.
Shane Warne came over. The Australians came to England, the Wall brothers. The Wall brothers played for Edgerton in our league. Australians, particularly at cricket, have an unbelievable mentality. They're not scared. You know, if they see a bull in front of them, they attack that bull straight away and they take on a challenge. And that attitude, I was brought up with that attitude. You know, Mark Taylor, Matthew Hayden was, you know, it was one day we played a cricket match at Bradshaw. It was raining. They'd batted for ages. We got into bat. There was only 15 overs left. We needed 200. And we came in. It was like, nah, game over. And he said, we're going to win this. He went out there, first ball 6, second ball 4. And it was that attitude of anything's possible. And I ended up opening the batting with him. Mark Taylor and his wife, Judy, and the family, still lifelong friends. And you're talking about someone that was a great, great opening batter. You know, not Matthew Hayden, who would go in there, he would concentrate for long hours, he would fight, you know what I mean? And these were lessons that I learned from professional players, you know what I mean?
See, my mind's already just literally exploding with questions, because before we get to the Australian element, in which I'm totally interested, let's clear up something that maybe everybody who's experienced the semi-pro leagues that you're talking about know, but the rest of the world doesn't. If you're in there batting, you or Gary, 11, 12, which is a nonsensical age, 13, 14.
Yeah.
The guys who's semi-professional living that age, the locals, not the hired guns, they're bowling at you to take your wicket. They don't care if it's whizzing by your head.
No.
There ain't no quarter given, am I right?
It's 100%, and they want you out just as much as anyone else. They don't come off a short run. They don't bowl slower just because it's a young lad. They actually bowl quicker because they don't want to be embarrassed.
Yeah.
And the fact is that half the time you're probably batting down at number 9, half the time you don't get a ball, half the time you're fielding down at third man, long leg, and doing the drinks when it's time for drinks. When somebody scores a 50, you go around with a hat to collect money for the drinks after the game. These were experiences that I found invaluable. I played against Otis Gibson when I was, it says in the book 14, it was actually 11 or 12, and literally was coming off his full run. After two or three balls, he came in and just dollared it up. And then when, you know, he couldn't get me out, full run, bouncing. And you're talking about no helmet. You know what I mean? You're talking about proper test, proper challenge. You know what I mean?
You have to have your eye in. You've got to be, you're going to when to duck, when to move. You're also in there to play the ball when you can.
You've got to be able to play cricket.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to survive.
Yeah.
And that is sometimes surviving by hook or crook. That's getting out of the way, putting your pad in the way, ducking. verbals, coping with sledging. You know, people say, about 5 years ago, they said, oh, sledging's unbelievable. Well, come play in the Bolton League when you're 11 year old and they're saying, oh, this little whippersnapper's in. Oh,
did they use the word whippersnapper? Probably not.
Yeah, that was what I was. I was always the whippersnapper, you know what I mean? And fantastic education. And if you think about it, then when you'd go down and play, say, Lancashire under-11s, it was like playing with a tennis ball because it was so easy.
Yeah.
Because you was playing Otis Gibson on the Saturday, Sunday, going playing with under-11s, it was like a stroll in the park.
So did England lose a very good wicketkeeper?
I was all right as a wicketkeeper.
No.
I was a better batsman.
I need more details. What you don't know is that the very first podcast that we did was Gary Neville, and we talked cricket because Richie Beno had just died, and we were both touched and affected by a truly great man, great cricketer, great captain, great commentator, great man. I think you could go so far as to say we were really moved by his departure. And we talked a little bit of cricket and some other ones, but we ended up with Phil Neville, who was facing West Indian pacemen in the Lancashire semi-pro league aged 10-11 at his mum and dad's insistence, without a helmet.
Wow.
Oh, it's Gibson. Impressive. It was. And therefore, cricket is something I've always loved. So I'm interested, if you're a better batsman, I'd like to know about it. I remember that John Arlott, one of the great voices I grew up, ended up living down by you in the Channel Islands.
Yeah.
So from cricket, I want to know about Guernsey and growing up and what sport in the Channel Islands was like for you then. But tell me a bit about cricket.
I loved my cricket as well, probably. Back in those days, it was probably only very close behind football.
Goodness me.
Yeah, very close. I had good eye-hand coordination. I saw the ball really well when I batted. I think the wicket had been helped as well because I'd keep wicket. I was the captain of the team, so when we won the toss, I'd always field first so that I could keep wicket, and I'd get my eye in while I was keeping wicket and then go out and open the bat from ball one. My eye was in, and so I had some really good scores. I made my first century when I was 13 or 14, and I think my top score in a 2020 evening league game was about 164, I think.
Playing, I presume, with all different ages? And
well, I played Guernsey under-18s when I was 15, so I kind of grew up playing only a year or two around my age, but the batting side of things I found came quite easy to me. Ian Botham was my hero as a boy.
Uh-huh.
Ian Botham was my Glenn Hoddle. So that's how I wanted to bat.
I think if you talk about cricketers, to me it'd be Viv, Derek Randall at the time.
Derek Randall was brilliant fielder. Yeah, so
I couldn't believe what he could do with it. And also, like we started this chat, like wherever he, whether he took his wicket, whether he came up with the ball, and playing with a smile, and maybe happy to watch him.
Yeah, very much so. Very like a comic book hero. Was Beefy was just incredible.
But then so are you, if you think about it. I mean, I grew up watching. Or reading Billy's Boots in whichever it was, Beano or that.
Yeah.
And Billy was at that stage. I just thought this was just like made up. It can't be true. It turns out that there were people all over the big and every podcast series who were doing the same. Because Phil, that was explained to us how he was captain of England schoolboys playing against Australia.
Yeah, it was
and he
amazing.
Had to choose between blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, he was at a much higher level than I ever was.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. So, did you have a choice at a stage, personally?
I got offered, obviously, an apprenticeship at Southampton when I was 16.
Yeah.
Had I not been offered an apprenticeship, or had, after my apprenticeship, I'd been released, my next attempt at a job would have been a cricketer.
Hampshire?
Hampshire was my nearest county, so I would have tried to have gone to.
And then the little time you have as a professional, who did you watch down at Hampshire that really struck you?
Robin Smith. Down at Hampshire, watching him, I think, was just another type of bravery, I suppose, watching Robin.
Because of the way he batted?
Because of the way he batted, he was kind of real, quite aggressive, quite swashbuckling, and, you know, he was a guy that would stand there, you know, watched him bat against the West Indian fast bowlers of that era, which were just, I dread to think what it was like facing those boys. But he was doing it, and he'd take them on, you know, I think watching Robin Smith square cut a ball off of a 90 mile an hour delivery was something pretty special.
I'm speculating here, but having watched your enjoyment of the spotlight and you're dealing with pressure, had you progressed your cricket? I think you'd have probably tried at least to treat the West Indian bowling in that manner.
I would have had a go. That was kind of the way I was as a sportsman. Any kind of sport that I took on, I wanted to do it, but I wanted to do it in style. I didn't just want to be okay at it. I wanted to do something that people would go, oh, even now I can, you know, have a game of table tennis with my mates, and we'd rally for a few shots, and then I'd have to try the big topspin forehand and the flick, and I just wanted to do everything with a bit of panache, really.
Less for enjoying.
Absolutely.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's talk about the Australian sporting identity, because yeah, it probably wasn't simply the cricket that gave you the armoury to become a successful professional footballer. It was that Australian sporting mentality. One of the things, again, we've both learned is that the great football coaches that we look at and admire now, let's take Guardiola for a moment.
Yeah,
they're magpies, jackdaws. Mm. They steal from other parts of sport all the time.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you agree that in Australia there is a general sporting mentality, irrespective of the event or the discipline, that we could learn from in terms of mental resilience, planning, toughness, teaching kids how to confront challenges?
The Australians are an unbelievable attitude for me. I'm best friends with Tim Cahill. Tim Cahill is a prime example of someone that, no disrespect, probably hasn't got that much ability. No disrespect, is he good on the floor? Is he good technically? No, but I tell you what, he's determined, he's driven, he's got ambition, he fights, he's got the core values. You know, the best coaches in life, I always think, are your parents. They're the best coaches in your life, and they instill the foundations in your life. I think Australians have got the foundations that my parents had.
Yeah.
You know, the hard work, the attitude, the discipline, the characters, the professionalism, the will to win, the will to succeed.
Sacrifice.
All those powerful words that you see on dressing rooms nowadays that I think are a lot of rubbish. If you try and manufacture discipline and all that rubbish, no, that's ingrained in your stomach, that. That's ingrained in your stomach. And Australians have it ingrained in their culture. Not just in one or two people, in their culture.
It's everywhere around you. If your parents aren't sporting, but you are, your neighbour, your brother, the guy in the shop, everybody will be on you about victory.
I always say it's, don't want to sound disrespectful, but kick your granny. Kick your granny to get that goal. Kick your granny to win a game. You know, they have that, I'm going to win, and it's win at all costs. You know what I mean? And it's not by cheating.
No.
It's just win. And the likes of Pep and Jose and Klopp, Allegri at Juventus, you know, these have that feeling.
Doesn't matter what front of house face you see,
no,
or the jokes or the style or the elegance.
No.
In behind, it's win
still
at any cost
win
other than cheating.
Win. I mean, you see Jose this year. What's he done at Man United? I've seen so far. Forget what's gone on the field. One, he's brought winners into the football club.
Yep.
Ibrahimovic wants to win, not only on the field, he wants to win in training, he wants to win off the pitch, he wants to be the best. Man United are one of the best they need to win. Jose now speaks like a winner. He looks like a winner. He speaks, we want to win. First day in the club, I want to win all four trophies. Okay. This club, you've got to dream the unexpected. The fans want to be excited. They want to win. Jose wants to win. And by talking like a champion, that spreads to the culture of the football club. And that's the biggest thing that he's changed so far.
Where, because we're going to come back to football. Where has cricket given you, apart from that foundation, the greatest joy? 2005... that extraordinary Ashes series. Have you ever, Lancashire? Because presumably you grew up in Wazamakrim, Atherton, Fairbrother times. Jesus, as we say in Spain.
Jesus.
Well, when's it given you your greatest joy apart from playing?
The Ashes were fantastic. But in terms of my own personal, I captained England at 15. I captained England at 15, I captained England at 14. I was playing cricket for England against West Indies. I had to miss the third test to go and have a trial for England at football. And then after my trial for England at football, I went back to play the fourth and fifth test against West Indies. And I did not want to leave and miss the second test. I went to the football. I remember it so vividly. It was an unbelievable experience. It was at Warwick University. My dad dropped me off. I was there for 5 days. I cried my eyes out every day. My dad came down on the third day because I'd rung my mum and said, I want to go and play cricket.
Yeah.
And my dad turned up. He said, look, I think you should stay and see out the week. You know, it's an unbelievable opportunity. In 3 months' time, you're going to be playing at Wembley for England schoolboys. Mm-hmm. And if you leave now, you might forgo that opportunity. I stayed, cried the rest of the week. He picked me up on the Friday night. We went straight down to Peterborough, to Arundel, played against West Indies the day after. At that moment in time, cricket was my only sport. Cricket was my only sport because socially, I met so many nice people.
Mm-hmm.
It had a different feeling than football. It's 90 minutes, you go off home with your parents. Cricket was...
It's much more integration. Integration.
It's 8 hours in the day.
Yeah.
It's family orientated. All my family were sitting around the edge. Afterwards, you'd stay overnight in a hotel. You'd be in Somerset. You'd be in Newcastle. You'd be in Darlington. I met so many great
people. You learn your country as well, don't you? The beauty of the country, the different accents, the different attitudes around the country. That's something that I think...
Definitely.
Because you would go into a professional career where no matter where you've stopped off, you've got no time in Istanbul or Rio or whatever.
Education-wise, my parents had to go in and see the teachers because they were worried I was missing a lot of school. And my father, who was against me giving up cricket to have more school, my mum was always, he needs an education. She said, look, he's getting an education by travelling throughout the country. He's meeting different people socially. He's living life experiences that will stand him in good stead. And to be fair to the geography teacher, I got an A in geography, purely and simply because I travelled the world and I knew countries, I knew capitals. I was the best at locating places. So it was an education as well. But socially, cricket gave me far more than football. The players were nicer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? You'd play cricket after game, forget. Football, there's hatred. And at the time, I'd preferred the cricket.
What happened? You can't leave our audience hanging. What happened in the Ashes, in the Junior Ashes? You go to Peterborough. What stage was the Test Series at when you go down to Arundel?
We were 1-0 up. They lost when I went away, and we ended up winning the Ashes Series. West Indies weren't great. West Indies were no different than the senior West Indian team. Unbelievable ability, no technique. Went in there, tried to hit the first ball for six. The fastest opening ball would try and bounce you and knock your head off first ball. It was that type. Nobody wore a helmet. Nobody wore a thigh guard. They were just fantastic, natural cricketers. But at that age, no direction, no teamwork, no field settings. You know what I mean? We were a lot more... We had a good team. We had Flintoff, Chilton, Solanke, who played for Warwickshire.
Oh,
we had Vikram Solanke, Paul Collingwood.
Oh, God.
We had a fantastic team who, five or six, went on to play county cricket.
We're not going
to
get football fitted in here.
No.
Why did Neville, when it comes to going to Warwick, to do the England trial, when you're captaining England at cricket, why did he say, no, take one of the tests off, go and play football? What was governing his logic that rather than, geez, if you're in that company, if things go to plan, you're winning the Ashes in 2005, in all honesty.
Because my dad thought I could do both. My dad was unbelievable. He would take everything on. Let's do everything. You know, play cricket in the summer for England, play football in the winter. So he knew I was good at both of them, and he did not want me to give up anything. And that's what he's been like with us all our life. No, do it all. Do it all, and then when you're 60-odd, sit back and say, I did everything, no regrets, you know. And that's what he said that week. He said, look, I can take you home now. I said, because if I don't take you home, your mum will divorce me. So he said, but I've been speaking to Gary, and he thinks you should stay. I said, yeah, he would. He's at home. He's at home having hot pot, do you know what I mean?
But, king of the castle.
Yeah, he said, we think you should stay. It was one of those moments I'd never forget. I was sat in a dormitory in Warwick University, and I just cried my eyes out for 5 days. I actually played well at the football. I just wanted to be my mates playing cricket. Because I was an opening batter. That was my destiny.
The amazing thing is at Norwich, unlike a lot of cities which I've been to, in my view, is most of the people do support the local club. It's a one club county. It's the only club in the county. Their nearest rivals are Ipswich, which is sort of a fair bit away, 45.
Ooh, I don't know if we're allowed to mention them out loud.
45 miles. And I had a great time here, but the funny thing is I was released by Norwich when I was sort of 12 years old, I went on a trial, and I never really expected to get taken on the second time, because I'd had the rejection. There was a centre of excellence, as they were called then. I went down for a trial for a couple of months. I have to say, I didn't like the rejection at all. And I started to take cricket more seriously. Mm. And I used to just play football locally and for my school. But I actually took cricket a little bit more seriously. I'm not saying I was a brilliant cricketer, but I was good when I was younger. And I played for the county. And I played a level up from the county, which was for the Midlands in a festival called the Bunbury Festival.
Oh, yeah, famous, yeah.
But then I sort of learned extremely quickly that there were other boys there who were far better technically. And, you know, boys like Mal Loy, I think, who played county cricket, Jeremy Snape.
This was your generation?
This was my, yeah.
Wow.
You know, I have to say it was an eye-opener, because even though I was scoring a lot of runs at county level, I could see that technically these boys were a lot better. In short, I couldn't play the short ball, which was, you know, as you go up the levels, people find you out, and you know.
Technically or psychologically, you could.
Technically, I think, you know, through coaching. I mean, sort of the old school coaching was, they were obviously coached differently and better than me, and you know, far more natural probably. But you know, I used to be a bit of a front foot dogger.
Okay.
Get on the front.
Not a Chris Tavares, but slightly more adventurous than.
Yeah, and you know, so I'm. You know, you get up to the higher echelons of the level, and this would have been it was an under 15 festival.
Yeah,
and I was sort of found out
for those who because you're now fourth on our series. You've spoken passionately about cricket, and I love my cricket. Started with Gary Neville and the death of a great commentator, Richie Benno, and we talked about that and tried to move it towards Gary's own analytical commentary skills. Malik Tissie was a very, very, very talented cricketer, but probably the most talented cricketer we've spoken to so far was Phil Neville, whose stories were, you know, extraordinary about facing a West Indian paceman aged about 12 in a full Lancashire grown-up league with his dad's permission and his mum sort of pushing the door and saying, don't be a softy, go and do it. Yeah. But for those who don't know cricket that well, when you see the short ball, just physically, what does that mean, that a bowler's doing towards the batsman in the wicket?
Well, he's bowling a lot shorter, so, you know, you play off your front foot or your back foot predominantly. I mean, the best, actually, when I moved back and finished football, I played a bit of cricket locally, and I had a player who played for Sri Lanka who pro'd for the club, who came to stay with us. He was called Ravi Pushpakamara, a good Sri Lankan name. I think he played 24 tests. He was a bowler, but he coached my eldest two sons to play, and he always used to say that you know, the best batsmen, you know, they could see the length of the ball instantly. You know, they could see the length, which, you know, was the difference between a top quality batsman and you know, a pretty mediocre one. So that, you know,
because the short ball, it comes in and bounces in and around the old Adam's apple.
And I think that, to be honest, I think people think that cricket, you know, a lot of sort of people who play football and rugby think that cricket is a game for softies. You know, I can tell you from my own experiences that, you know, it certainly isn't. And if a ball's hurtling down you at 80, 90 miles an hour, you don't. You know, if you don't see it, then it's a major problem. So at the top level, these players, their reaction skills, you know, an ability to play the ball late. I mean, it's just, you know, it's astonishing reaction.
And nerve, because you ever lose your nerve in that instance. Okay, your technique can bail you up, but if your nerve goes up at the top level now, and that ball is fizzing around, then you may as well just walk away.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about a game psychologically, certainly as a batsman in cricket, and you know, people compare all sports, but that is probably, in terms of brutality, you can have bad luck with a decision. You can get caught out brilliantly. You can be in a bad run of form. So psychologically, and people talk about psychological elements of all sports, but that's you know, a batsman where you're supposed to score runs. I mean, that's probably the toughest sport, position in sport psychology.
It's high noon. It's a mean bowler one-on-one, yeah. Except the batsman doesn't rotate quite as much. Every over, you know that a new mean-faced bowler is going to come in and be pinging that thing down at you or try to trick you with spin. But it's pure... When that ball's being delivered, it's real 1v1, not 11... Yeah, not an 11-man sport on the wicket.
But the biggest thing is you have one chance, in fact. Mm. Where at football... You miss an opportunity, you can get another chance, and that's the difference. And there may be a variety of reasons why, you know, at the top level, and I watch a lot of cricket. At the top level, people get a chance in the Test team, and they can be in for two Tests, four innings, be caught out by a brilliant catch, get a brilliant ball. Someone else can go in and be dropped twice and make 100. You know, the margins at that, and then psychologically. You know, mentally, that you've got to be so strong to get through that at the top level.
I chose to start by seeing whether you shared a wee sense of loss that I had when I heard the other day that Richie Benaud had died. Mm. Because thinking back, aside from him being exceptionally good at his job, he was one of the voices of my childhood. Now I'm dramatically older than you, so if we listen to him, then we listen to him at different ages and different times. But did you listen to him? And when he went... Did it catch you and think there's one of the greats?
Yeah, I absolutely did. And I'm not one of those people. When someone dies, I don't tweet out about it. I know a lot of people do and I have no problem with it, but I tend not to because I think you've probably been tweeting out about it every single day. But I absolutely love Test cricket. I played cricket from the age of 5 through to 18 until the youth team manager at United stopped me. And even now, I'm not a fan of 2020. I'm not a fan of 50-over cricket. However, I can sit there for 6-7 hours all day long listening and watching to not at times a lot happening, but the intrigue of it, the endurance of it, and obviously Richie Benaud was an incredible commentator, a voice that you just seem to recognise if you're a great cricket fan, as I was, and you would never get tired of listening to him. And I think that, he will be... probably the most memorable cricket commentator. You think of voices in other sports that have sort of captured the imagination of everybody and you associate with that sport. And that's, I suppose, in some ways, makes me feel the responsibility of what I do. Because in football, in professional football, when I was a football player, you'd think, oh, punditry or the pundits or the commentators. You don't pay a lot of attention to them. In some ways, sometimes you even think, well, are they that? No, we're the ones that are important, the managers, the coaches, the players. But actually, in terms of adding the colour to it for the people who are watching, the supporters, it's a vital job. It's a big responsibility because people think of the 1966 World Cup final goal and they remember the commentary over it as much as they actually do the goal. And they think of the Aguero goal and Martin's Aguero. And City fans have got that over their shirts. You think of in... 99, we always think, will Manchester United score? They always score, you know, and those lines give you a little tingle, particularly when you were part of it in 1999, and you think, you know, commentary adds big moments to things, and the responsibility that, let's say, someone like Richie Benaud had all those years doing what he did and filling all that space but never becoming tired of him. So it's a great responsibility, really, when you look at it.
How much do you get in life that's reliable, regular, good for your sex life, and free? Yeah, the big interview. All of these, in their full form, and many more, are available if you search for the big interview on Acast, that's A-C-A-S-T, iTunes, or usually wherever you get your podcasts. The big interview is the idea of Backpage, and it's produced by them. Thanks to Beer Jacket for the music. Keep up to date with everything that we're doing at grahamhunter.tv, where there's a little box where you fill in your email address. If you sign up there, look at our newsletter. We're on Facebook, search for The Big Interview, and GH Podcast on Twitter, plus Instagram. keep in touch. Let us know what you think. More soon, baby.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.